Prepare yourself, one and all, for Big News Wednesday. Welcome back, everyone. It's the Damage Report. I'm John Arola, and it being a Big News Wednesday and all, Sharon Reed joins us now. Sharon, how's it going?
And it really is a Big News Wednesday, isn't it?
It is. There's a lot to talk about, arguably too much. And it's weird because Wednesdays are the one day a week where we're not going to have any like live action in the trial. And yet, regardless, there's still so much to talk about. So everyone, you've made a wise decision to tune in today. We're hopefully going to have a lot of fun with the news. We're going to be starting off by talking about who ruined the GOP. I think we can all agree it sucks, but whose fault is it? We'll be debating that. We will have a little bit of the fallout from yesterday's hush money trial updates. And let's see. Oh, this story coming out of Pennsylvania is so fascinating and the implications that it has for the general election. So we're gonna get to that too. We're gonna try to figure out exactly what Carrie Lake's position on abortion actually is, because she doesn't seem to know at this point, and more besides. So much to talk about. So definitely, if you're on a platform where it makes sense to do so, hit the like button, share the stream, get your comments in. So you can get yourself a Blueprint gift card. Don't forget tyt.com/voteTDR. You can vote every day. You should vote every day for us in the Shorty Awards for Best News and Politics Podcast. And with all that said, Sharon, you ready to do this thing?
I'm so ready.
Okay, you should be ready because we're gonna have some fun today, actually, I think. Not in the aftermath so much. That's gonna be brutal, but let's jump into this.
My predecessor told the NRA, he's proud he did nothing on guns when he was president.
So that was Mike Johnson back during the State of the Union with his big old eye rolls. How could you say these accurate things about me? And it happened and it seemed a little bit petty and a little bit juvenile. But immediately after the end of the State of the Union, I think most people moved on and were done with that. But one man was not done. And interestingly, it was Mike Johnson. Because Mike Johnson, remember, is not just the speaker. He's the guy with the weird porn notification thing on his phone. He's a guy with some interesting views on things and personal accountability. And so apparently it bothered him that he had not only done the eye rolls, but that so many people had noticed it. It had become big memes. It was everywhere. And he, in a way that like this feels so much like something that would have happened 20 years ago rather than now, he felt so bad that he apologized to Joe Biden about it. He was at a Friends of Ireland luncheon that he was there and Biden was there. And he apparently pulled Biden aside to apologize for the memes. The president, Joe Biden, laughed, then told the speaker he was glad Johnson was better behaved than Nancy Pelosi had been during Trump speeches, saying, "I'm just grateful you didn't rip my speech up, Jack." The speaker replied, "Well, Mr. President, didn't think my friends back home, or don't think my friends back home didn't want me to light it on fire." Our country is overrun with radicals. But anyway, so that came out. And like, if that's it, then I see that and I think, that's interesting. I don't even know that I think that he needed to eye roll. It was immature, but you know, it's 2024. He apparently thought that crossed a line. And he apologized. And by the way, Mike Johnson and Biden have been able to work together on a few things. It almost feels like maybe some form of bipartisanship is still possible. Not necessarily bipartisanship that addresses like the biggest issues that we face, but like BS stuff on the periphery. And that said, the right is very, very, very mad that he apologized. And we'll turn to those reactions in just a sec. But Sharon, what do you make of this? It seems, I don't know, like old timey almost.
Yeah. Well, it's phony, but it's appropriate. And here's what I mean. Listen, Mike Johnson is like a prisoner in solitary confinement. And maybe, I don't know, they keep all the curtains closed and maybe there's a tiny little sliver of sunlight that gets through for an hour to a day. And so he knows there's a big world out there. And he's thinking the only way to survive these other, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene and these other little creepy crawlers is to attach myself to the Reagan Democrat, the old school Democrat, Jack Kemp, John McCain. And so I think he's thinking, I have a long way to go. But if I just befriend this guy, okay, with the Ray-Bans, might be okay. I might be able to survive this and I might be able to reinvent myself. I really think that's what's going on here. And I think Biden even said, If you stick with me, kid, I'll help you do it. I don't know if he can or not, but I think this is what goes through my head.
Well, I don't know. Individually, I don't know if Biden can. And him publicly trying to help Johnson might hurt Johnson, actually. Like, the fact that they sort of came together is what's hurting him. But I think that there is something to that theory, not for Biden to save him, but in the very near future, the Democrats might need to step up and save Mike Johnson, because the crazies are circling and there's blood in the water. There's apology blood in the water. So here is Marjorie Greene, who posted this. Remember when Nancy Pelosi ripped up President Trump's speech? She did not apologize. Joe Biden is destroying America and Mike Johnson is apologizing for rolling his eyes. Again, okay, first of all, you dunce. They already covered the whole thing with Nancy Pelosi. You thought that this was some sort of like, hey, nobody probably remembers it. No, we all remember it. Like, we here on the Daily Report, we criticized it. But anyway, they've already gone over that, okay? Because it's an incredibly minor thing. This is not the huge, massive thing that you're making it out to be. I know that you're looking for literally anything that makes Mike Johnson seem as crazy as you do on your best day. But this is like a nice thing. This is like he's a congressman from Louisiana. It's supposed to be that sort of like country friendly, polite sort of thing. You're the one who's forgotten about that, Marjorie Greene. He's being more authentic than you are in this case. But it's not just him. Steve Bannon says Johnson equals worm. And for a guy who kind of looks like a vaguely anthropomorphized sandworm from Dune, that is a biting remark. Tommy Lauren says it is absolutely wild to me that House Republicans fought so hard to get rid of McCarthy only to replace him with Bayou McCarthy with darker hair and glasses. I don't know what her issue is with the hair and glasses, and the idea that they're the exact same person seems a little bit ridiculous. And then you ladle on top of that, Tommy Lauren, I think that you forgot that you're supposed to be pretending that the Dems are the ones who hate country folk. You think the idea that a guy is like comes from a place with Bayou is embarrassing? It's worthy of mocking him for? There are plenty of his constituents that live in the Bayou country of Louisiana, and I don't think they like someone who lives on the coast mocking them so much, but whatever, I'll leave her to deal with that. Cat Turd will close things out, said, I'm starting to believe Mike Johnson is the Antichrist. And I don't doubt that that's true. Cat Turd is a moron. Why wouldn't he think that? So anyway, they're being very harsh in their criticism, Sharon. This is something that he did a long time ago. It's not like he could really avoid it now, but it is ridiculous that there's seemingly nothing he can do that doesn't lead to him getting attacked at this point. What do you think?
I think you're absolutely right. I think if he wakes up and has a latte in the morning, that's a problem. I think if he, you know, excuses himself for a phone call with the missus, that's a problem. Everything he does is going to be a problem. And I don't know how much longer he's going to even be able to not just remain speaker, but perhaps even call himself a Republican, as long as MAGA's in charge. You know, it is what it is. But the criticism is silly. I remember Nancy Pelosi, of course, ripping up the speech. I thought it was glorious, you know, when she snatched it. Oh, that really was against the Presidential Records Act, don't you think? If you really go back to that. But what I loved most was that, what was that thing she did? Or am I doing it wrong?
I
can't remember why or when she did it, but that to me was far more meme worthy than the torn up speech. I mean, the speech is garbage. Okay, we knew that.
Yeah. That's true. And look, I think in the moment I laughed at both of those, but the issue is like, for me, I want that sort of like purely performative thing from someone who does lots of stuff that is not purely performative. Yeah. Like if AOC ripped up the speech, I'd be like, oh, that's good, you know, or whatever, insert a Bernie or something, insert whoever you have respect for. Whereas for Nancy Pelosi, it's like, yeah, no, I know that you're good at this symbolic stuff. Yeah. I know that, but like, could you be awesome on like climate change or something? But that said, I agree. In any event, I want to turn to the backlash now, not just to the apology, but to all that Marjorie Greene has done as the kind of shadow speaker of the House these days. Let's jump to what Senator Tom Tillis thinks about Marjorie Greene.
I think she's uninformed. She is a total waste of time. She is a horrible leader. She is dragging our brand down. She, not the Democrats, are the biggest risk to us getting back to a majority.
That is Tom Tillis, a person who I don't think I've ever agreed with on anything, but like, Can a reasonable person disagree with anything that he just said right there? Yeah, she's an idiot. She's uninformed. She should never have been in a position of leadership, even in her own life, let alone in the Republican caucus. How has it come to this point? What a dereliction of duty of all of her colleagues in the Republican caucus to allow her to rise to this notable role. And she is definitely doing damage to their ability to maintain a majority in the House. And to be clear, I don't even think that this is a case where Marjorie Greene is like accidentally dooming them. It's possible that that's the case. She's a dullard, but she's also probably far more comfortable being in the minority in the House. She doesn't actually want to accomplish anything. It's easier to just like whine on your podcast and snipe at people when you don't have to actually rule. I think that she'll be more comfortable in that position, and I don't think she's alone. But he's also not alone in criticizing her, because I have been noticing that it's been spreading. Fox News actually ran this op-ed: Marjorie Taylor Greene is an idiot. She is trying to wreck the GOP. And no, I did not write it. It was Liz Peek, actually. And the New York Post, interestingly, had this front page: "Nyet, Moscow Marjorie." Damn, that is the New York Post going to war with her. You have, let's see, this is from Piers Morgan, who I will briefly acknowledge exists. He says Moscow Marjorie Taylor Greene is Putin's useful idiot and the real betrayer of America. Newsmax ran this opinion piece: who put Marjorie Taylor Greene in charge? Which I think is a great question. But to be fair, it is not all attacks in the media. She does have some allies in Russian state TV who have said that she is fur clad, demonstrably heterosexual, and a GOP beauty. So they like her. Granted, they're a little bit biased. They like that they think that if she succeeds, they'll be able to snuff out every bit of life in Ukraine. So again, they're a little bit slanted in this, but the pushback against her has been pretty broad and pretty strong. Sharon, what do you think?
It has been, and she's another one that perhaps wants to just, if she could make herself small, I know she's petite, you know, this way, but make herself small for a moment, she may be okay. But if this were the Real Housewives, this would be the point where she would realign herself with Lauren Boebert. They'd be friends again. This is what the housewives do. They get into it with everyone. You have no friends left. And then suddenly your enemy is, well, you made up. And so I look for her to form alliances elsewhere, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, look, she has kind of Matt Gaetz. She has Paul Gosar. She had, who's the other guy? It was one of the other, the second one to sign on with her and opposing Johnson. So there are a few. I mean, none of them are people that you'd want to be stuck alone on an elevator with for even 20 seconds. They're all crypt keepers, ghouls, ghosts, and goblins. But she has a few allies, not many. And I will just briefly say before we move on, there's been a lot of these sorts of attacks of like Moscow Marjorie stuff. And I look, I understand where they're coming from. I don't love that sort of thing when it's being thrown around. It often feels cheap and easy. I understand that in this case, she has been incredibly biased in the way she is like obsessed over Ukraine aid and everything. And I will just briefly say, you often have this thing where you have a mythical version of what a person is on a topic and why they're doing what they do. You pretend it's this when it's really this. And I think this is a great example of it, where Marjorie would say, I don't want us wasting our money there. I don't think it's our fight. I don't agree with that position, but you could sort of say, if you just don't think we should be involved in this, that could like be a principled position. I don't agree with the principles, but you could have that position. And they pitch themselves being that for that reason. She's not the only one. Tulsi Gabbard for a long time was like, oh, I'm just, you know, I don't want anyone to push for war. But then you realize what position they really hold, because she does not just oppose the aid. She has been vindictive towards the Ukrainians, their government, and Zelensky, spreading conspiracy theories. And now you could say it's still principled if she's like, I don't want to get in bed with them and screw the Russians too. But you'll notice she never gets to the criticism of the Russians, the Russian military, their tactics, Vladimir Putin. In the same way that Tulsi Gabbard pitched herself as being, I'm just against nation building and foreign interventions, and that's why I criticize the Democrats for it. And that was the end of it, because she never criticized the Republicans anymore. Glenn Greenwald in media is another version of this. It's the convenient brand of being an outsider willing to criticize everyone, but never getting around to criticizing one entire half of the political spectrum. So I find it to be a little bit suspicious, which is I'm a little bit more okay with these labels. That said, you know, whatever you want to label her, I think it's more interesting is what potential effect it has on the future of the Republican caucus. And that said, I want to pull one more figure into this. When we're trying to evaluate what Mike Johnson's chances are going forward, let's jump to this.
How do you square this divide now between MAGA and Mike Johnson with your support of him and our base?
Well, look, we have a majority of one, okay? So it's not like he can go and do whatever he wants to do. I think he's a very good person. Again, we've got to have a big election. We've got to elect some people in Congress, much more than we have right now. And we have to elect some good senators, get rid of some of the ones we have now.
Okay, well, that was a spicy bit at the end. We need to get rid of some of the senators we have now. But if you set that aside, that briefly sounded responsible, understanding, nuanced, maybe. Donald Trump acknowledging actual reality that they have a very narrow margin, almost no margin at all in the House, and that to survive, Johnson has to make deals and stuff like that. That is all objectively true, and Trump is acknowledging it. Now, he's not coming out and saying 100% it has to be Johnson. Do not oppose Johnson. I will oppose you if you oppose Mike Johnson. He's not doing anything like that, but he is lending support to Johnson when he's facing this massive pushback from the right. And I think that's fascinating. Now, I would not get too excited if I was Mike Johnson, because Trump's support for him really seems to swing depending on the day. You know, back when they were in Mar-a-Lago together just a couple of weeks ago, Trump was super in favor of Mike Johnson. And today, he's very much in favor of Mike Johnson. But along the way, you might remember this little incident.
Are you going to protect Speaker Johnson?
Well, we'll see what happens with that. I think he's very good.
Did he brief you on his plan to do four separate foreign aid bills?
Yeah, we're gonna see what happens with that. For a guy who loves to meddle, saying we're gonna see what happens with that is not the sort of statement that you want. But that said, he seems to be cozying back up to Johnson again. And so, look, when you have the factor that some Republicans might not want to oppose Trump by opposing Johnson, that some Republicans might not want to be seen as being the close ally of Marjorie Greene, and when you have some Democrats saying they might be willing to vote for Johnson as Speaker if a motion to vacate goes forward to save him, my gut says that he's in an okay position, Sharon, but I am curious if you agree with that. Do you think, fast forward election day, is he Speaker on election day?
Can I give a percentage?
Yes.
I resist the urge to do 50-50, but I think the percentage that he will remain Speaker through election day, I'm gonna give it 39%. I almost said 43. I think it's 39%.
Okay.
Because it's just, you can't count on Trump. Can Trump even control Marjorie? Okay. Perhaps certain times. I got 39%. That's what we're looking at. That's pretty good odds for him and the predicament, don't you think? I mean,
yeah, I'm going to go higher.
Oh.
I'm going to go, because they're going to be more and more distracted by all of the elections and the trials and all that, their ability to oppose, although perhaps that provides cover. I'm going to say 70% chance.
Oh, wow.
He makes it through, but only because some Democrats save him. I think that's what I would say. Now, I will also say, if he isn't the Speaker, it isn't even necessarily because of Marjorie Greene. It might be because they literally might lose the majority. Like, there could be more resignations, premature resignations, and maybe that ends with him actually prematurely resigning, but we will have to see. In any event, just every time I think that this drama is over and they're gonna go back to just doing other terrible stuff, they double and triple and quadruple down. I think it's fascinating. Okay, with that said, we're gonna take a short break. When we come back, we have to talk a little bit about some of the most recent happenings in Trump's hush money trial, as well as the way he might have shot himself in the foot yesterday. We'll be right back. By the way, we give out our Blue Apron gift cards generally in the social break. But if Ravaging Wolverine doesn't have one, I like people who raise points that I'm not entirely sure of exactly where I stand on. So let's give Ravaging Wolverine, the member, a Blue Apron gift card. Send an email to rewards@tyt.com, unless you already have one, in which case we can. But thank you for the comment regardless. I also wanted to say, I never actually get around to, I read the podcast reviews, but I do them in the social break, where by definition, people who are on the podcast can't hear it. So I don't want to do that. I want to very quickly say, Captain Observer recently left a review on Apple Podcast saying, this is now my favorite podcast of about 7. You guys do this perfectly. I look forward every day to this podcast. I'm so glad I found you. Thank you, Captain Observer. And I'll read one more right now. Katrina Bott says, a real gem, politics with real heart. Thank goodness. The host and the rotating regular co-hosts use enough humor and genuine human moments to lift politics out of the doom and gloom, keeping a snappy pace. Thank you. That helps me wake up in the morning. Also, the content is released so often that I'm surprised it's all such good quality, clearly made by a great team. I love every single word of that. Thank you. We do our best, the entire team, those you can see and the many, many that you cannot. But thank you for that. And with that, why don't we jump into more news? Donald Trump sure seems to want to go to prison. He's at least risking it on a daily basis. And in particular, I want to talk about what happened yesterday. And I don't just mean that at the hush money trial, they had that incredibly contentious back and forth about whether he had violated the gag order, in which the judge declared that his lawyer had lost all credibility. I don't mean all of that. I mean what Donald Trump did, the big dummy, hours before that, knowing that the prosecution was already pushing for him to be fined and potentially eventually incarcerated for violating the gag order, knowing that they were going to discuss it that day, the idiot went and did a local TV news interview where he repeatedly violated the gag order. Now, I cannot play the video for you because unfortunately it's local news, but I will do my best to tell you what he said about Michael Cohen. Well, Michael Cohen is a convicted liar and he's got no credibility whatsoever. He was a lawyer and you rely on your lawyers. But Michael Cohen was a convicted liar. He was a lawyer for many people, not just me. And he got in trouble because of things outside of what he did for me largely. It was essentially all because what he did in terms of campaign. I don't think there was anything wrong with that, with the charges that they made. Because again, like, let's pause for a second. He is all over the place. Michael Cohen went to prison for his involvement in this exact thing. And Trump is such an idiot that he's like, okay, I gotta pitch this guy as a liar and as a criminal. But he's a criminal because of what he did for me. And I want to imply that that shouldn't be outlawed, but that he should go to jail for it. I'll just say both things. I'll just throw both things out there. And so that's what he did. And he goes on to say, but what he did is he did some pretty bad things, I guess, with banking or whatever. But that was a personal thing to him. Yeah, had nothing to do with Donald Trump. He was just paying hush money payments for Donald Trump's affairs out of the goodness of his own heart. And then he goes on to talk about David Pecker and he starts citing people who've written op-eds or gone on Fox News to say that it's not a case. Again, if you think that this is compelling, have your lawyers say it in court. That's how you can influence a jury or even a judge potentially. Just babbling in an interview does not sway the hearts nor the minds of the jurors. But importantly, this could be consequential for Donald Trump because we still don't know what the judge is going to do in terms of those violations of the gag order. What we do know is that the Secret Service has apparently held meetings and started planning for what it is that they're going to do if Donald Trump is actually held in contempt and sent to short-term confinement for his violations of the gag order. Now, I want to be very clear because there's a lot of lies going around on Fox News about this. The prosecution is not asking for Donald Trump to be locked up, even briefly, yet. All they've said is, fine him now, warn him, as he's already been warned multiple times. But if he again violates it, then potentially he can be locked up. And what's fascinating to me, and again, I don't think he will be locked up. There doesn't seem to be any sign that he will be. But he already knew they were going to be debating this. And he went and did it anyway. And he's been on Truth Social. And he's doing it again and again and again. He is begging the judge to lock him up. Probably because he knows that the judge would be in a very difficult position were he to do that. This is what Trump always does. He does unprecedented things that demand a response that comes way too late out of deference to Donald Trump and fear of the consequences. And then when you finally do the thing that he has been forcing you to do, they attack you for being a radical. And I'm like, that's a couple steps ahead in this case, but I can already see it coming. Sharon, what do you make of all this?
Well, I think it's fascinating that the Secret Service is preparing for a, you know, worst case scenario. I don't see why the Secret Service guards have to do the time with him if that ever happens. Why can't they just contract with the same people who watched Epstein and those people? They already have prison guards in place, and I don't see why they can't just watch guard Donald. Well, you know, it's about that last thing you said, John. All of these allowances are being made for Donald Trump. And I've been throwing things at the television. I've been screaming. My daughter actually screamed back, "Stop talking to yourself. You sound like a weirdo." But the thing about it is, I stopped only when the legal analyst began floating that little thing about how, okay, hold it till the end and let's see how he behaves. And then we'll be able to justify that. Okay.
Yeah.
Regardless, contempt, you got, you know, 60 days or something like that. But it's just too much. Why can't he be treated just an eighth of the way you, myself, others would be treated? He's out of control. Even Don Jr. is doing this nonsense, okay? Stop.
Yeah. No, it is everybody is saying there's two tiers of our justice system. Thanks. Just some of them are very inaccurate about what the higher tier is. And Donald Trump is the only person on that tier right now. And by the way, the Secret Service is not directly commenting on these reports, but they do say that they have to defend the president or the former presidents and some other people. And that's why they might have to be thinking about this. They do say they have not had any talks about long-term incarceration, which I don't believe them, but that's what they're saying at least. Now, that said, I want to turn to not the courtroom, but outside of the courtroom. Donald Trump had made a lot of bold claims about what the press conferences he was going to do would be like, and none of them have come true. It's been a very weird sort of thing. I don't think it's worked out for him at all in multiple ways, and I want to talk about a few of those ways. But first, here's a sampling of how these press conferences go, because it's not like it's not the White House press corps. It's just people yelling questions at him, and this is how it looks in practice. So they're just peppering him with questions. He doesn't address any of those questions. He'll come out with his big stack of printed out Fox News articles that he printed out in full color, massive waste of ink, and just whine for a little bit about how it's too cold. But the questions remain. And I understand that most people are wording it as, "Where's Melania?" or whatever. That's what draws the headlines, admittedly. But look, I think we all potentially understand why Melania Trump does not want to be in there. And we've talked about that previously. I want to move past that to the broader picture of he doesn't have anyone other than his legal team there. I mean, he has like Alina Haba or whatever, who's not technically on this case. And I guess she's something like his friend at this point. Maybe not in the way Melania would prefer. But anyway, it's not just that Melania is not there. Don Jr. isn't there. Eric isn't there. Ivanka isn't there. The kids that he likes and the kids that he doesn't like aren't there. None of them are there. Nobody is there. And that seems to me as a non-expert to be weird. To be clear, some people who follow a lot of cases like this say that that is in fact weird. Former federal prosecutor and legal analyst Joyce Aline says, "I have rarely seen a defendant facing trial alone with no family. At least one person in the courtroom for him. It's a sad commentary for a former president with four grown children and a wife, all of whom seem to have deserted him in the moment." But that said, I don't want to just assume that it's a sad moment. So Sharon, here's what I want to talk about. Is this more of a strategy that if they were to go, that would lend credibility to the charges? It would make it seem worse. I mean, look, his family has to rally by his side. Or is it the way the critics are saying, it just looks bad for him that nobody seems to want to be by his side? What do you think?
I'm with the critics. It does look bad. And I think the kids are busy. You know, I think they're lunching and Hamptons or whatever else they do. Especially Ivanka. She's not going to touch this. Tiffany's wherever, maybe on the West Coast. I think it looks really bad. If my father, who's a good, upstanding citizen, were in trouble, I wouldn't care what anybody thought. I'd be sitting right there behind him supporting my dad. The fact that You mentioned none of the kids. And I don't know, none of the kids? Yeah, it's bad. The critics are right. I don't think it's a strategy, not a bit of it.
Yeah, I think, yeah, they're busy with their podcasts or whatever, writing books titled Triggered. No, so they are busy, but he's on trial for 6 weeks, all day long. Like, and you're not gonna see him otherwise. This is where you can see him. Why wouldn't you be? It just seems on a human level like you'd wanna be there. But that said, and I'll expand what I have previously said about Melania to the entire family. Not that I have a lot of empathy for Don Jr., Eric or whatever, but they know he did it. You know, they're allegations. They know he did it. They know that every part of this is true. And for them, do you think it would look good for Don Jr. and Eric to be there showing support for him, knowing that everyone else in the family knows that he actually did it? That would look bad for them potentially. And it would just be such a hard thing to do. Like when I think about my dad, as far as I know, never did anything wrong in his life. But if he had been alleged of all this stuff and I knew deep inside that he had done every bit of it, it would be super hard to be there and support him. And the family is in this position now where in all of these cases, there's no real cover story. He defamed E. Jean Carroll. He assaulted E. Jean Carroll. They committed the fraud. Many of the family members were a part of committing the fraud in New York. He did the hush money payments. They know that. He stole the documents. He did the coup. None of this is secret. Almost all of it was out in public. So how do you stand by his side during this? And notably, they basically choose not to. And so it's a really weird. Can you imagine Joe Biden on trial for 6 weeks and no one's with him? Barack Obama. George W. would have people by his side. Only Trump is left alone because of how obviously guilty he is and the incredibly weird relationship he has with his family.
But John, can I just
anyway, final point goes to you.
Well, yeah, it's just that, but they stood by him other times. Maybe it benefited them, sure. But he's done, can you name something he's done right? I mean, they've been at this a long time and they've mostly stood by his side and the Trump name, this and that. So I don't know if that's why they're not there. I really do think they're lunching and golfing and doing what Trump offspring do. And they really don't care. What do I get out of it?
Yeah, and by the way, we don't have any reports that like Trump wants them to be there. I want to be clear about that when I make the comparison that I will. But I will often see, like I see posts on Reddit or whatever of people who their parent, like usually it's the dad, wasn't a part of their life, never showed them love or whatever. And now the dad is like super old and he's like desperately trying to get back in with them. Like it has this sort of feeling of like you never invested in actual relationship. So why would you expect anything to come of it? Anyway, with that said, I want to set the trial aside. We will come back to the trial tomorrow. I instead want to return to the interview that Trump did. And I want to talk about something that he said that I thought was amazing. Okay. Donald Trump did an interview with local Philly TV, and I want you to hear the Fantasyland version of America and politics and 2024 that he spins out in lieu of reality. So he said, he was asked about abortion and how Joe Biden is focusing on it. He's gonna make it a big focus of the 2024 election. Trump's not worried, he'd have you believe, on the abortion thing. And it's a very simple situation that has now been worked out. And this is what people have wanted. It's taken the complexity out of it. It's very simple. It's now states. The people are voting and they're voting all over the country. Sometimes it's conservative, sometimes it's not conservative. But the abortion issue is taken, has been really largely taken off the table. Because when we did this, we did what both sides, everybody wanted. Now, when you look at it and you look at what's happening all over the country now, states are voting, Ohio just voted. All different, by the way. It's tailor-made and it's really working out well for people and they're very, very happy. And it's really taken largely out of play. And I like this strategy of just say what you desperately wish was true but is not. Just say it. Say it over and over and over again. Reality, you might occasionally see. You peek over your shoulder, you see reality creeping up behind you. You just run away from it as fast as you possibly can. And instead, pretend that what you did was not a monstrous decision that resulted in unimaginable harm to tons of people already growing every single day that has led to chaos in the different states. Oh, you know, everybody's happy. Everybody wanted this. Everyone, they're super happy. Everybody's really, really happy out there. Yeah, do they seem happy? Do they seem happy with the Republican Party? Do they seem happy with you? And by the way, when the people are voting, sometimes it's conservative, sometimes not conservative. The hell are you talking about? When the people are asked, it only goes one way. They don't agree with you. They don't agree with your side. They don't agree with the bans. Now, there are bans being put into effect, but not because the people supported them, because a handful of monsters in elected office support them, which is not the same thing as the will of the people. And he can like try to make himself feel better, try to present it to some host on TV that he's not in trouble. But he's doing that because he knows how much trouble he's in when it comes to the election. And I would love it if this was the thing that sunk him. Look, I personally think there's a list of 1,000 things that Donald Trump has said and done that should result in him never again winning elected office. A lot of it is personality stuff. It's stuff that bothers me on a personal level. But how awesome would it be if one of the most consequential and substantive policy effects that he had on our country was the thing that finally killed him? Metaphorically speaking, I would love that. Sharon, what do you think?
I'd love it too. First, these are the ramblings of a madman. It's just, he went on and on and on and on, ramblings of a madman. I cut some of it out
in the middle, by the way.
Did you?
So that wasn't the whole thing.
He helped him out a little bit, and it still was not really coherent. I don't understand where he was going with this. And it was just this circular thing, on and on and on. It's why people get divorced. I can't keep doing this with you, okay? But that said, I think abortion may be, maybe I'm speaking for myself, this unifying thing, okay, where the percentages are so high of people saying, why are you doing this? Why did you do this? Why did you get rid of Roe v. Wade? That this could be finally his undoing. This could be that one issue.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope so. People were not, in fact, everybody was not pushing. They were pushing for people to send it to the states. Not because they have some sort of actual veneration for the ridiculous concept that like the most important thing is that we have, you know, some federal laws and some state laws. They thought that that was the only way that they could potentially win because they know that they can't win at the federal level. There's no reason to, the people don't support them. This is not what people want. You know what we had previously? Every individual had the choice. If you believe that abortions were wrong, you were never obligated to have one. You didn't have to have one for decades and decades and decades. That was never enough for the ideologues. It is not about them. It's about meddling in the affairs of other people. That's what it's about. Now, that said, we're going to take our second break of the hour, come back. We have the primaries are still going on. There's very little reason to pay attention to them because the thing is a foregone conclusion, right? Not so. There was an interesting result out of Pennsylvania last night, and we're going to break it down after this. Okay, everybody, with that, Jesus, some of the comments, we're going to move on to other news. Okay, it's easy to forget, but the presidential primaries are still happening. I mean, we know that Trump is going to be the nominee for the Republicans, Biden's going to be the nominee for the Democrats, but technically you still have to have the process, and they are. And you might think, what's the point of paying attention to that? Well, let me tell you what the point is, because sometimes there's still some fascinating stuff coming out of these primaries. Fascinating for Donald Trump. Fascinating for his chances of winning the presidential race because he won the Pennsylvania Republican primary last night. That's the good news for him. He won by a lot in that primary. That's the second bit of good news. He got 83.4% of the vote. But do you know what 83.4% of the vote isn't? It isn't 100% of the vote. And that means nearly 160,000 Republicans saw Nikki Haley drop out of the race over a month ago. A month ago it happened. And they thought, you know what? Screw that guy. I'm still gonna go vote in this primary just so I can stick my thumb in his eye because I don't want him to be our guy. Now, not every one of those people necessarily will not vote for Donald Trump come November. Some of them perhaps will. But if you're I don't want to say the word petty because I get what you're doing and I approve of what you're doing, but it's needless. If you're willing to do that, I think it's safe to say that a good number of those voters will not turn out for Donald Trump. And they could. They're Republicans. They're tapped into politics. They're interested in what's going on. They're just not interested in Donald Trump. And I've been comparing a lot of numbers and telling you what numbers are not. Do you know what 156,000 votes are? Nearly twice as many votes as Biden won Pennsylvania by in 2020. So Donald Trump has turned off about twice as many highly motivated Republicans in that state as what Biden won by. And so we don't know for sure if this is what could determine the Pennsylvania race, assuming we get to it. But it is certainly not impossible that it could swing the race. And that I think is fascinating. It makes me think, Sharon, by the way, that when Nikki Haley dropped out or whatever, Trump was famously quoted as saying that I don't want him to come back to me. I don't need their votes. Well, the first half of that sentence might be true, but you might come to regret the second half, Donald Trump. What do you think?
I think he'll absolutely regret it. And he didn't even, she barely got the words out when she urged him to, you know, open the door to the tent again. I don't, tents don't have doors, but you know what I mean. She said, welcome these people back. We're not your enemies. We want to work for the common good if you are of that persuasion. We want people to come back together. And he basically did exactly what you said and said, get out of here and you're done and you will never be back here again. And so now he's going to have to live by that or die by that. Again, no one wishes him ill will, but speaking of the election and the outcome, and every vote matters. Every vote matters.
Yeah, well, he sometimes seems to understand that and sometimes seems to feel differently, because he's been talking a lot about the election, about the role of the RNC in the election. And whether he thinks people voting is important, again, like so many things, really depends on the day. So he told Truth Social investors and influencers recently, if they didn't cheat, I would stand here and say this election is over. But we've got great people, Michael and Laura, the two co-chairs of the RNC. And we've got great people that are watching. I said, don't get me votes. I don't need any votes. We got all the votes we need. The election is in literally months. What do you mean you have all the elections, the votes you need? Just make sure on election day, there's no cheating. So again, we got all the votes we need. I don't need any votes. I don't know exactly what that means. That could mean a few different things. It could mean the RNC shouldn't put too much resources into the race. Like, you literally had your family take it over and now you're saying you don't want them to invest in the race for you. Or maybe he means like, we don't want you to encourage early voting or mail-in voting because I'm trying to demonize that, so I don't need those votes. It could be that. I'm honestly not sure. He just said recently, this was 5 days ago on True Social, absentee voting, early voting, and election day voting are all good options. Republicans must make a plan, register, and vote. But last year he told his supporters, don't worry about voting on election day. Jesus, okay. He said recently, so we have to be careful. You gotta get out there and you gotta watch those voters. You don't have to vote. Don't worry about voting. The voting, we got plenty of votes. You gotta watch. So he's telling the American electorate, who has been notably less invested in elections than like European countries for literally decades, and it's hard as hell to get people out to vote. Hundreds of millions of dollars are spent to try to get them to vote. I want you to go out, but I don't want you to vote. I want you to just watch everyone else who's voting. And so if every Republican takes this advice, on election day, we will have 70 million Republicans watch 78 million Democrats reelect Joe Biden, I guess. I don't know what you make of all this, Sharon. If you are a MAGA person, are you supposed to go? What are you supposed to do? I don't know.
Again, he's doing it again. Madman rambling. And I think if you are still part of this MAGA revolution, that I can't answer that question, neither can they. They're gonna make it up as they go, okay? Just like the whole QAnon thing, you know, we go in this direction. When that doesn't happen and things don't end over here, well, then we're just gonna pivot. We're gonna pivot. So they don't, we'll make it up when the time comes, is the answer that you'll be given. We'll just wait and see. You just wait and see. That's another thing that they like to say. There's no rhyme or reason to it.
By the way, before we close out that conversation, Summerlee, progressive, won her primary. It was not particularly close. We had wondered sort of leading into it, if this is gonna be one of the many cases in which big lobbies, either AIPAC or like crypto lobbies or whatever, would get involved and try to elect a centrist. In this case, not so much. So, and they had spent millions against her back in 2022. So they decided not to do this in this particular case. I don't know, maybe they just want to put their resources in other races or whatever, but hey, that's good news. We'll take it. Okay, with that said, let's move into one more topic to close out this hour, starting whenever we're ready with this.
Well, I think we all need to realize that our first priority is to save as many babies as possible. And this law passed, the Arizona Supreme Court said this is the law of Arizona. But unfortunately, the people running our state have said we're not going to enforce it. So it's really political theater. We don't have that law as much as many of us wish we did.
It's political theater, says Carrie Lake, who wants to be a senator for Arizona. Let's talk about political theater, because sometimes the plot of this theater can be a little bit hard to follow. So Carrie Lake right there, and that just happened, is very angry that the law, the 1864 incredibly harsh Gileadian anti-abortion law has been upheld in Arizona, but is not in effect, that it's there, but they're not actually stopping people with it from having abortions. Okay, so that seems clear. She wants the abortions to be stopped. But what's interesting is that she has previously said, no, this is like a Democrat plot. That should not have been passed. We don't want that. And previously, she had advocated for it to be upheld. So if you're a voter in Arizona, you might be very confused about exactly where she stands on this. And let me summarize it for you. She stands wherever the people in the room with her want her to stand. And she's not really standing so much as like shuffling from position to position, telling everyone exactly what they want to hear, but apparently forgetting that people outside of the room can hear what you're saying, Carrie Lake. It gets videotaped, it gets spread around the state, and you are revealed as a big fat phony. So to be clear, we're going to catch you up on all that. But in terms of phoniness, I want to just add a little bit more phoniness from Carrie Lake before we go through the timeline. Take a look at this.
What they're really doing is trying to get us focused on that, when what is going on behind the scenes is they're pushing for the most extreme radical abortion law in the country that they're pushing on Arizona. While we are focused on that, a law that is not being, that will not be pursued, and the AG will not push this law, they are behind our backs pushing a law that will be the most extreme in the country, that will call for abortion right up until the birth of the baby. And that will not only be the law, it will be cemented into our Arizona Constitution. And so what we need to realize is we've got a couple choices here. Do we fight for a law that's not going to be the law of Arizona? It won't be pursued. The AG will not push this law, or do we fight what the Planned Parenthood folks want to do, which is give Arizona the most extreme abortion law in the country?
Yes, they're the extremists, by the way. Planned Parenthood, that wants everyone in Arizona to have the exact same rights that they had for decades upon decades upon decades. That's radical. That's wild. I'm not the radical who wants this 1864 bill that I'm pretending will never be law to go into effect. I'm literally advocating for it in this interview, but please try to ignore that. And so look, Sharon, she has previously tried to get out in front of this because she knows that this and the associated amendment, the ballot measure that's gonna be apparently there in November, could doom her chances of getting the Senate. But I guess she then remembers, oh, but I need the crazies to like me, and the crazies like the crazy bill. So she's in a very difficult position, and she doesn't seem to be clever enough to find a way through it. What do you think?
And I think she's a pretty devious gal. But it just shows the predicament that they have kind of twisted themselves into a pretzel, and there's no way out of it. The other part of it is, I always wonder, as they're delivering these incoherent lines, how stupid they think people are. And some people, honestly, I don't know if they're stupid, but they want to absorb this fully. The rest of us are just, I'm embarrassed for you. I'm embarrassed. But she's in a predicament, and there's just no way out of it.
Yeah, it's very difficult. I mean, when you look at the polling or whatever, take a look at this. Do you approve or disapprove the court's decision to ban nearly all abortions? It's net negative 36% approval. I mean, Democrats are negative 65. Independents do not like this. It's even net negative 3 disapproval for the Republicans in Arizona. And she has advocated for this. She is on tape having advocated for this. This was a horrible series of statements from Carrie Lake. But can you really be surprised by that? She's not a good politician. I know that she's been in the news for several years, but she's never earned it with like an amazing bit of oratory, an amazing bill she's championing. she just sort of hangs around. And we'll see what happens in November. Okay, with that said, that's unfortunately all the time we have for the first hour of the show. So those of you listening to the podcast, thank you so much. Thank you for leaving your reviews on Apple Podcasts. I love reading those. I'll read more of them on tomorrow's show. But for now, those of you watching live, there's much more to come in the aftermath. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.